This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
We're going to continue on to our next section here about Lindsay Clancy. That was about the fight on the internet over did she do it. Now let's go over to another portion of the arguments in Lindsay Clancy, confusion and conspiracy. We're going to be talking about another element of this specifically, which is, I'm trying to get my notes pulled over here. As we,
I mean, pull them up. I got them. I got them.
And then it moved on me right around here. Okay. The psychosis fight. That's what we're looking at here. So let's dive into that. Okay. A lot of people speaking about it and speaking. And I think it's important when you're reading comments, just because someone says they have some sort of standing or some sort of education or some sort of backing in what they're talking about doesn't mean they actually do. And there's a lot of people grandstanding right now. And this one kind of stood out to me because it's funny what they claim to be in control of and what they claim to be an expert of. Pretty much falls apart within their first sentence. Okay, here we go. This is two posts here that were on our YouTube. It says, study psychosis. Psychosis absolutely does not surface 1 second and subsurface the next second like they're implying. Psychotics do not know the difference between reality and what is not real. So they're already conflating two different things right there. There's psychosis and psychopathy. Psychotic is not a person suffering from psychosis. So I'll throw it back into your court. How about you study it, considering you're fucking it up within the first sentence of what you're trying to argue? Why would she ask if she had a lawyer as soon as she wakes up from a coma? A true psychotic would not consider that they did something wrong because their reality conduced that they do what they did. They kind of got the Brian Koberger, let's go to the thesaurus and throw words into sentence thing going on there. You're just wrong. You're just wrong. That's all. You're just wrong on your use of the words and your assumption of what those things mean. I got nothing more for you. You're simply wrong. And then they double down in another post. I actually studied psychology at a university level. Well, I feel bad for that university. A person with psychosis doesn't rationalize regarding their hallucinary perceptions. I wonder if this is Koberger, because there's a lot of like, let's get words in here. The person actually believes that what he hears or sees is real. Nobody can say a voice made me do it. Why didn't she listen to the real voices of the people that surrounded her continuously providing help and support? Now her biased psychologist, which was hired by Reddington, said that she didn't tell any other therapist that she heard voices telling her to harm the children except for him, and that after she murdered the children, she didn't once hear them again. Sentences, sentence structure. Suddenly, the supposed psychosis she only reported after she committed the murders is gone. How convenient. How convenient. Okay. Doctor?
It's interesting how, the way these things like this get a lot of play with people is because there's a few fact truths in there that are sprinkled in that say, oh, it must be, I recognize that must be true.
Yeah.
But it's sprinkled in a lot of tons of conjecture, tons of really wrong statements, inaccurate statements. And so when you put that all together in a word salad like that, it can sound authoritative. And when people like to try to be, one of the Robert Cialdini's rules of influence is authority. And so if someone kind of decides, well, I have a degree in this and degree in this, I have authority, kind of like what they're doing in the testimony right now. All right, so let's hear about your authority. Let's back it up with something. And so that there's nothing here on that one. It's a word salad all over the place. Now, and some of the things they were also saying, like, when you're a psychotic break, you don't rationalize your behavior. Well, she didn't. She just described what was happening. Command hallucinations are exactly that. They're command hallucinations. Matter of fact, according to Resnick, it wasn't just a command hallucination. It was command action as well, you know, unable to control the voice. Now, there's a few fair points. That's why I said there's a few fair points in there. So some of the psychologists that are testified and mental health professionals also said that it was unusual for one massive episode like this to last for 22 minutes, as they said yesterday. But again, that guy is doing what right now? He's under cross-examination by Reddington. So he's kind of debunking his authority on that one. So that's what we do. Keep an open mind and keep it all in, and then it's never just one thing you're looking at. You're looking at totality of everything. And if this is one wobble for you, okay, like I'm telling you, yesterday was a little bit of a wobble for me. I thought he had some great testimony until he brought up religion. And he didn't lose it for me, but he lost it for the jury on that and a lot of people because it was completely inappropriate, got reprimanded for it, almost caused a mistrial on it. But there's a lot of data in there to go through. And again, when you have a wobble, we explore it a little bit deeper. But that's what Reddington's doing now. But that's how we interrogate information and keep in the world of maybe until the jury decides. But yeah, most of what was said in there, it's a lot of inaccuracies, tons of inaccuracies. But with a few facts sprinkled in there that makes it sound...
And that's how this case goes from like educated discussion to I heard ... and then people heard that. And
I want to give thanks, though. Give thanks. You know, as I said to Jen yesterday on the show, and I say to her audience that is, and a lot of these people aren't our regular audience, but hey, I thank you. Thank you for making me think really, really hard on this case because we explore every avenue and it makes me really think hard. I do a ton more research than I typically do, but you make me think. So that's why interrogate the information. I'll try to prove you right, but you know what? Not even close.
Yeah. I mean, just to answer some of the points about psychosis not surfacing the way it did, every expert who addressed this says it does. They're misconstruing psychopathy and psychosis, two very different things. I won't give you a full lesson. You can find it. We did a great segment with Siobhan about it the other day.
Yeah,
she asked for a lawyer waking up from a coma. True. Dr. Brias testified that she did, that she felt horrified. I would too. I mean, if you're coming out of that psychosis and realizing, oh my God, what the hell did I do? You would be horrified. You might be wanting to ask for an attorney because there's no way of explaining your way out of that. And you're trying to figure out what the fuck just happened to me. So that seems like a reasonable request. She didn't tell any other therapist except him. It's half right. Zeisel conceded her treatment records from September 22 to January 23. Don't document a voice, but after the killing, she described it to Patrick on February 6th, and Patrick testified to it, to Chaplain Kavanaugh, to Dr. Resnick, and to Dr. Mack, the prosecution's own rebuttal witness. Never heard them again? How convenient. Well, Zeisel did testify under cross that she hasn't heard voices since 23. She's also been under continuous psychiatric treatment and medication in Tewksbury since May of 23. Both sides have that fact. They read it a little bit differently. There you go. I hope.
So there's a few things in there. So asking for a lawyer right after. Here's what I'm going to do. That's a wobble to me. That was interesting. It's like, all right. So that, again, that's why I entertain it. It's like, all right, what kind of situation would make me want to do that? Would make her want to do that? How common is that? So that's where when I hear something like that, I dive into research. All right, how many people coming out of a situation like this that they've done a horrendous act or been accused of a horrendous act? How often do they make this as one of their first statements, one of their first concerns? And then I look at the research. Mm-hmm. I look at my own impressions. I look at research. And I say, it's actually a little more common than you thought it was, even though it stands out here because it's the first time you've ever seen it. Doesn't mean it's the first time it's ever been done. So I look at research. I look at data. I look at context, and so that's how I deal with that one. But I entertain it because you're right. I agree. When I heard that, I said, "Boy, that's a little interesting, isn't it?" But in the totality of everything that's going on, I say it's not a wobble, but definitely gave me an initial one. And as for it's interesting, and I agree. I want to caveat everything as we do every day. Not a mental health professional, not a licensed clinician or anything like that. Not pretending to be an expert in this area. Just reflecting back the things I've heard in testimony through my own experiences and things like that. I have found the whole discussion on the psychotic break of her and the postpartum psychosis very interesting as well, because there's a lot of nuances to it. It's rare, it's unusual, and because it's so rare and unusual, it's hard to study over long periods of time. But here's something interesting I found that no one's talked about yet when it comes to human behavior. A lot of the things that have been testified to, and this is based on a testify, but they haven't brought up after it, is that the amount of stress that she was under, the feeling she had because of being overwhelmed as a mother, and the lack of sleep, not being able to get exercise, her diet, all these things, the medications that were off and on, all the things. Every single medical professional has talked about all those stressors escalating, and all those escalations were getting worse and worse and worse, that eventually led to what some of the experts, especially on defense side, were saying was the psychotic break, which happened for about 18 to 22 minutes. Again, I'm guessing at that, but that's roughly what they said during the testimony. So, and then everyone's saying, well, how come it's that one-time thing? Well, let's look at this. Remember, we just outlined, and all the medical professionals outlined, all the events that were happening in her life that led to the psychotic break, according to defense. So what happened after the psychotic break? All those stressors left. So why would she still have a psychotic break if all those things fed into the psychotic break? She's in a hospital. Her kids are gone because she killed them. And the medications have shifted. All the things that led to the break had shifted. So I would expect that to shift as well. And remember, from testimony, psychosis ebbs and flows. And this could be my hypothesis as a potentiality, but they didn't cover in testimony, so I don't know as a fact, as the fact that since I'll ask Siobhan about it, since a lot of those stressors changed, there's a good probability that the reason why we didn't see the psychosis again afterwards is because the things that led to it were no longer there.
It got under control, basically. She was misdiagnosed. She was taking the wrong types of medication because she was prescribed the wrong types of medication for bipolar. It turns out bipolar, misdiagnosed as anxiety, generalized anxiety disorder, and depression. Those meds, you take those, which there's plenty of, and she certainly had a lot of them. You take those and your true underlying condition is bipolar, they're going to do the opposite. And one of the side effects happens to be psychosis. It's pretty clear cut. It's pretty clear cut how we got here. You manage it correctly, it can go away. People can live with bipolar and live happy, productive lives when managed correctly. But obviously all the damage was done here. She did what she did. But yes, she may be now in a better state of control. But of course it went away. It's finally being managed correctly because it took a bomb going off for someone to finally go, oh, maybe it's this.
All the stresses it had caused, it had changed.
Yeah. Yeah,
especially the lack of sleep. You know, Siobhan highlighted it, and other professionals during the testimony have highlighted that lack of sleep was the kerosene that kept fueling the fire from you know, postpartum depression to suicide, well, SIDization, and then from bipolar to bipolar two. I mean, hell, I'm learning about bipolar and bipolar two differences. I mean, I'm learning so much in this case. I mean, that, you know, again, you know, for the horrendousness of what we're witnessing and going through, you know, the education we're all getting on this and how important mental health is, and mental health for women, especially that are dealing with postpartum issues, is tremendous. And the lack of resources, or I want to say some places I'm sure are very good, but we're seeing highlighted the places that are absolutely atrocious and have failed so miserably.
This is about average, if you will, and that's not good. Yeah, this is another string of comments that we've been seeing kind of coming in. I'm just going to read a bunch of them off and we'll kind of go through the mistruths in them. She was non-compliant taking the medication, meaning most of the medication she got off just as soon as she started. She was building an alibi. I understand it's incomprehensible that a human being, especially a nurse mother, be that insidious, but it happens, and there are people out there just like it. Lindsay knew she was doing wrong. A male entity did not possess her and make her do everything. No one's saying she was possessed. She sent her husband away. She searched various things, including Andrea Yates, getting information she needed, and an alibi. She is a sociopath. Another one, if one thinks critically, yes, the psychosis theory is disputable, called crafting an alibi. called having a cluster B personality disorder. It's emotional to claim it's indisputably temporary psychosis. And another one believing that she searched Andrea Yates. No such search appears in any testimony of her searching Andrea Yates. Her former colleague, Margaret Hemp, testified that when she told Lindsay about the Yates case in Lindsay's first year on the unit, Lindsay had never heard of it and cried, asking how a mother could do that to her children. What she did actually search was how can you treat a sociopath on January 20th, which prosecutors highlight, and symptoms of postpartum psychosis, hallucinations on January 19th, and intrusive on January 20th, which the defense highlights. Same phone, both sides. Non-compliant, got off the medication as soon as it started. Partly true and contested. Giolotta testified Lindsay asked to change meds nearly daily and at one point wanted to stop entirely. The defense's answer is that the drugs were making her worse. And Women and Infants Hospital itself recommended tapering a Seroquel. There was 30 different prescriptions, 13 different meds, 30 in total different dosages of those 13 that were doled out on and off, which you just shouldn't be doing. And this is where the provider question comes in.
Because non-compliant is ridiculous.
Non-compliant is not the right word here. And also toxicity is not the right word either, because it seems it's either she didn't take them at all or they weren't to toxic levels.
And part of the reasons for it also was not just the negative effect it was having on her, but also she was trying to breastfeed and she didn't want to affect the baby. So think about this. She was not wanting to take the drugs. First of all, she feared getting addicted. So she's definitely feared of her health for being addicted to these drugs.
The second they affected her sleep. That's the big thing with these drugs, is the fear of not being able to sleep. Yes.
And also, it was affecting her being able to breastfeed, which she wanted to take care of her newborn.
Oh, Robin, remember, she hates her children and is somehow conspiring to let Patrick.
See that? That's why the only explanation, if you're going to this, is what the doctors were saying. And then also, I'm with you to the creating an alibi. So if she was creating an alibi here, here's a guarantee, it wouldn't be the first time in her life she's creating secret life and trying to create an explanation, an alibi, lying, deception, all those things who create wobbles in people's lives. This wouldn't be her first rodeo doing something like that. There'd be other leakage that would have come out in the investigation. There'd be leakage from her friends, families, and colleagues. And Reddington, I guaranteed, would have saw that and done something about it and investigated someone else or something else. As well as the prosecution. Yeah. not even Reddington. Think about this. If the prosecution had any inkling of an alibi being tried to be crafted by her, it would have been presented.
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
The other allegation that she's a cluster B. Again, look, we've seen that in plenty of cases. She's been reviewed by many experts now, and cluster B sociopath ain't the diagnosis. Nope. It's a bipolar too. If you're armchair diagnosing, there's some elements that can look kind of like that. There is. I get how there can be confusion on that, without a doubt. But the actual doctors who have taken the time to look at her did not come back with that conclusion. Yep. So there
and a lot of doctors
that.
Over a large period of time before the event, right after the event, and 3 years after the event. So a lot have looked at her entire span of time, and that one never came up.
Yeah. So that's that. Let's go and continue the conversation. The Lindsay Clancy conspiracy and confusion episode, as we try to break through so many of the comments that are out there about this case, where it is, where it's going, what's fact, what's fiction. Remember the old show? Remember Fact or Fiction? That was like, it was on like Sunday nights or something.
Right.
It was like, truth, fact, truth and the guy's lies. Walking through fog, and it was like stories that you had to determine if they were real or not. It was like Unsolved Mysteries era back, like early 90s or so. It's kind of what it reminds me. We just need a fog machine. That would be great. Okay, the last five here aren't about the night of January 24th. They're about everything around it, what Patrick did before and after, who actually qualified to call her a psychopath, and what the verdict means either way. This is where the most confident comments have the least record behind them, as we're going to go through. And I certainly welcome yours and your thoughts in the comments section as we try to break some of these down.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Brewski and Robin Drake.
The guilt side of this case isn't attacking the evidence so much anymore. It's attacking the witnesses. The doctor's too old. The chaplain wasn't ordained. Even Clancy's face in the courtroom is getting entered as evidence. Every one of those attacks has a problem, and we're going to be going through some of them that have been being brought to light on the internet. The knock on Resnick is that he's 88 and only saw her for a few hours, 4 months after the killings. Okay. Dr. Max saw her for the first time in April of this year, 3 years after. That's not Mac's fault. The state's experts aren't allowed until the insanity defense is filed. But it's still 3 years. Resnick got there in 4 months. Max got there in 3 years. Is there more reliability to the other, Jen?
I don't have reliability on any of them. And that's why in all of these trials, expert testimony, sometimes it's not even allowed because they say, they're concerned about the jurors not following the evidence and instead taking the word of experts. I've seen it happen. It happens all the time. In this case, they are allowing it, but the judge has made it critically clear. These experts have no more weight on their testimony than anyone else. Mm-hmm. So there's zero more weight. So when you, each juror and all of us, we have to take into account each person who testified. Are they, you know, did they make sense? Was it congruent with the time of the of what happened? How long did they interview? What was the condition of the person they interviewed? You have to look at the totality. For me, the totality, when you're talking about a case that is this important, I am not basing it on what they had to say. I'm basing it on the facts before us, period. And that does mean, though, to Robin's point, what the husband said, what the mother said, what the mother-in-law said, what witnesses said, what the nanny said. So I base it on all of that, and the experts just cross, just X each other out. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because you can have, I mean, that's when we're going through this case, I was going through it earlier today. It's like, okay, well, one side says this, and now the next expert says this and disagrees. And who's being paid for who and where side? It's how it always works.
You know, I keep coming back to this one point we actually do have in common on this and where I do agree, and that is the premeditation side. I saw premeditation, you know, for a period of time before. It's just what we are disagreeing on is what you can and can't
do. What does it mean?
Right. It's like, for me, from what I'm understanding from the experts, is that you can actually plan in psychosis. You can actually plan and be premeditated in doing the horrendous things she did to her kids in psychosis. And so that's where it really comes down to, is like, I think half the, you know, large number of people don't believe she's in a psychotic postpartum state, and other people do. And that's because, again, there's no debating she killed her kids. There's no debating she's mentally ill. What I think the real debate is, was she in postpartum psychosis when she premeditated the killing of her kids? And again, that's what I think it comes down to ultimately. And again, it doesn't matter what us here thinks. We can do all the research out here we want, but again, it's what the jury is getting, is what their impressions are, it's how it's being presented in the courtroom, it's Reddington's presentation, it's the prosecution's presentation, it's what's working, not working, and that's where, you know, we got our man Bob Mata on the scene in the courtroom, which we keep seeing every time they pan to the audience. So it's going to come down to that jury, and that's why these cases are debated like this, because they're exceptionally rough, and they're also very rare. Because like Jen said at the very beginning, we don't know ourselves what was exactly in her mind. Everyone's just trying to figure it out because no one's believing her that she said, "I heard these voices." Fair. She's the one on trial.
Jen, let's talk about what's going through a lot of people's minds, things that have absolutely nothing to do with the case directly, but have somehow made it to be part of people's opinions. It's not just the camps of we think she's responsible or not. It's we think it's somebody else entirely that some people have gone to, which is not even up for debate. Like, she's admitted to doing this. There's no, like, back in the land of reality where we can certainly disagree about was she mentally there to be conscious of it. But this whole other camp is Patrick did it. And God knows how weird those stories get. Some have him going to such extremes where he's literally, you know, there with a voice changing device and being the voice of God to her, telling her that she needs to do that. I mean, it gets quite insane. What's your reaction to all of that and that world that has emerged out of this? Because I know you've seen tweets back at you in your feed from the opinions you've expressed that go way off base from your opinion. And it's not my, it's like a whole other category out there.
It is a whole nother category. And I think it's induced because this is so insane to think that some voice told her to kill her three kids. And like I always say, well, did they also say, call your husband and make sure he's away? Did they say to Google? Did they particularly say to use the exercise bands? And when one exercise band maybe wasn't tight enough, move to the next exercise band and do them one by one. And by the way, in between, order Pedialax and talk and make phone calls. I mean, what did these voices really do, right? So when you start getting in what I think is absolute conjecture and out there, now you have people springboard off that and say, oh, well, if it's the mystical voice, what if it was Patrick's? What if Patrick really did it? And they try to infuse really ridiculous notions that don't line up with the evidence to comport with this thought. But that's what everybody else is doing too with the psychosis theory. Because they're taking facts that don't comport with somebody in psychosis, which I just named, to the voice made me do it. The voice that, by the way, was never mentioned, even though she mentioned killing her kid or hurting her kids, not killing, harming her kids to both her parents. That the voices never came in until after.
Welcome to psychosis.
She was only psychotic at the time. By the way,
that's how that works.
I'm thinking errands and now I'm going psychotic.
Yeah, I mean, Jen, that's just kind of how that works. I mean, you can be in that state.
You just don't like the definition of psychosis.
Well, I mean,
don't agree with it.
It's like what you're describing is like, yeah, that's how. I mean, there's people who are in a psychotic state that think they're being watched, that there's hidden cameras everywhere, and they could sit here and conduct their normal day. There are cameras everywhere. Oh shit.
Well, the good thing, we all do agree that we think the ideas of Patrick doing this are really ludicrous. Yeah. So there you go. There's another area we do agree on is that those are, you know, you have nutters and then you have supreme ultra nutters, and those are ones.
You were talking about the voice. There's a theory that the voice was invented for her malpractice lawsuit. The lawsuit was filed in January 26th. The chaplain says Clancy told her about the voice in the first week, still intubated. And she described the voice to Mac too, male, laughing, telling her it was her last chance. She told the prosecution's own doctor about the voice. Why would a faker, I guess, do that? I mean, and then also the chaplain saying that, yeah, she told me about it early on too. So, well, you know, it was there from early on before anybody's like lining up attorneys to sue anybody.
It's still after the act, not before the act. Tony, have you ever watched Harry Potter?
Actually, no.
Oh, wow.
Ever.
Have you, Robin?
Yeah, I've read all the books and watched it, yeah.
Okay. She was literally Professor Umbridge. It was like unbelievable for those in the audience. The chaplain, in my opinion, look, you know it. 200 visits at a hospital she wasn't even assigned to. She absolutely wrote out, in my opinion, scripted what she was going to say. The verbiage she has is absolutely out there. Her, you know, and turning. No, I don't believe the chaplain, but this is the biggest reason the fact pattern tells me it's not the chaplain. 200 plus visits. She wrote all of these notes, and the jury's going to get all of this. All of these perfect notes, even quoted her. Never once touched on the alleged, because that's what she says, alleged voice. Never, ever mentions that. But, you know, copious notes on everything else. That was one of the most unbelievable performative witnesses I've ever seen. That's my
I didn't see her as performative. I saw her as definitely different. There's no doubt. Her presentation was different. I'm with you, though. And she explained it well, and they got her on cross. You know, I get the reasons why she didn't write it down, and it definitely hurt her. Not writing down, you know, writing down a few quotes and not writing down those big ones. I'm with you. That hurt her credibility for hearing those voices. But I found the consistency of her to be up there, just because she did see Lindsay for a amount of time. When I took that one data, like if she stood alone, if she was the only one that said anything about the voices, I'm like, that's pretty sketchy. But again, it's one more data point of what was presented, because I'm with you. Her not writing it down, even though she's not required to write it down. She said, I'm not one of these mental health professionals. I'm not required to do this. I do this for my own note-taking capabilities and refresh my memory. So all those reasons, they made complete sense. But at the same time, if you would hope that given what actually transpired, she'd have that awareness enough, I better write this shit down, because that's a big one. So I'm with you on that. I won't disagree. It would have been helpful if she did.
There's a lot in this case.
I don't think it happened. That's why she didn't.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, in the world of maybe.
There's a lot where it's like, maybe this should have been done differently. Maybe this should have done better. Maybe you shouldn't have gone out and gotten takeout when your wife has said these horrible things that are, you know, going through her mind. I get it. But, you know, at the end of the day, there's a lot of things you look back on and go, at that moment, I wasn't thinking that way. For those of everybody who was caught in the ether of Lindsay Clancy.
Yeah, because I'm sorry, let me add one more thing. You know, let's reverse it for a second. You know, just for understanding why she wouldn't do that. So here you are, you're a chaplain. You were a professional. She's a vice president. I think she's, again, everyone that's much more fact and detail oriented. I don't have all my notes in front of me. She's an executive at a VP level for some company for, I think she said, 10 or 15 years before she decided to move on to be a chaplain. And so she, from what I gathered from her testimony and when they're going through her credentials, that she wanted to make these connections. She wanted, and I think a lot of it was volunteer time she did too in there. So I saw someone who's extremely empathetic, trying to make a difference in people that were hurting, and that's her role as a chaplain in these hospitals when she went in there and was touching base not just with Lindsay, but all these patients that were in there. That was her role. She saw that. She saw herself as a humanitarian. I don't think at the top of her mind when she's doing these sorts of things that she'd be called to testify at this level. If you reverse and you push yourself in that situation, would you really be thinking that? Because she's not a medical professional, she doesn't have to chart anything she does, and so it would be a major blip of something she would have had to have done that she's never done before. That's why I'm reasonably saying it would have been better if she had, but yeah. I understand why she didn't.
Yeah.
I think the whole thing was a blip. The only reason the defense put her on was for that one reason.
Sure.
She really should have never been called, to be honest with you, because that wasn't her job, but because
she's point.
Willing right, to say that, and this is the quote, right, that Lindsay alluded to a voice, and alluded, she said it each time, alluded to him. What does that even mean?
No, she said what the voice actually specifically said.
Oh, if you look at it, though, it's alluded. She each time prefaced what was alluded. And to me, she was, I didn't buy anything she said. And I think she wanted to be on TV.
You know what really helped for me with her was when Resnick came in and did a deeper dive and understanding of what that actually, so what the chaplain was saying and what she said was that the first thing that Lindsay said was, and again, if I misquote it, I apologize, my children are safe now. And then when Resnick came in and explained what Lindsay said the voice said to her 4 months later, was that the voice said the only way for your children, yeah, look it up if you can, Jen. The only way for your children to be safe is for you to kill them and then to take care of yourself as well. And so her mental state was that in order for my children, which is their main motivation in life, which is that life arc through all the other testimony, was her children's safety and well-being. The command voice comes in there. And then Resnick took it that next level from his diagnosis, was that it wasn't just a voice, but in some cases of postpartum psychosis, they're actually physically unable to stop from doing what they're doing from that command voice. And so that's what, so when I put those two together, I was like, oh, now I understand why she used that wording because of this. And so again, never just one data point. That's what I sucked it in from both.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot there. There, and at the end of the day, as much as, you know, I think, you know, everybody's argument, you know, holds, it's very complicated. The facts are as we understand them at the end of the day. None of us know what the hell was going on in her mind. A jury of her peers also don't know what was going on in her mind. Very quickly, because I want to get onto Nolan Wells. I don't want to go over this a thousand ways. Where do you think it lands, Jen? Because this might be the last time we're on the air before there is a verdict. Yeah. Do you think guilty, not guilty, hung jury? Where do you think it goes?
With this? Most likely a hung jury.
Yeah.
But if I had to lean one way or the other, I think she will be found not guilty by reason of insanity. Whether I agree with it or not, sure.
That's where you think it lands, Robin.
Yeah, I agree with Jen on this. I see. Look, another point. I think it's probably going to be hung. Yeah. Just because, again, when you look at the makeup of what they said the jury's made up of, you had more women on there than men. But again, it's hard to tell. We're not in that courtroom. But I'm agreeing with Jen just from public sentiment, what we're seeing. It's leaning more towards the Lindsay side right now in public sentiment,
get a unanimous jury, though. I think we're going to end up with a hung jury as well. I don't see any way this ever gets tried where you get a unanimous jury. Don't.
It's rough.
I hope it's not guilty by reason of insanity, but I don't know. I don't know that you're going to get everybody there. Not
criminally responsible, I think.
Yeah, criminally responsible. Yeah, I just don't know. But fascinating discussion. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.